Two car bomb attacks within 24 hours have killed more than 100 people in Iraq. Though the war's end was declared months ago, the recent bombings add further evidence that both Iraqi civilians and American military remain in danger. The armed services are just beginning the greatest troop rotation since World War II. New troops bring fresh resources but less experience to Iraq. Those headed home also face challenges. After living in a war zone for months and months, all troops, no matter how close or far from the action, will be affected, even changed. This hour, we'll talk about reintegrating the military to life stateside. For all troops, how will they fold themselves into their family lives and tasks, taking out the trash, driving through traffic? And what about Guard members and reservists? How will they function behind a desk? How can they find counseling? What challenges will they face? Join the conversation. Have you or a family member recently returned from serving in Iraq? What challenges have you encountered? Do you expect a friend or colleague to return home soon? What are your concerns? Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And our email address is TOTN at NPR.org. Our first guest is Teresa Coppa. She's the wife of a former Army officer, Michael Coppa, who served in the military for 7 years, including tours of duty in both Afghanistan and Iraq. He returned to the States last summer. Thanks for being with us, Teresa.
Oh, thank you for covering such an important subject.
First of all, what was the hardest part for you about adjusting to having your husband go overseas in the first place?
Well, I think with the Iraq situation, everybody kind of has their own challenges watching a loved one go over there. I felt a complete sense of lack of control. You know, I wanted to tell him, be careful, and I wanted to tell him what I had seen on CNN that day, you know, watch out for what they said, or, you know, and I didn't know. I didn't know what he was doing. There was a feeling of utter helplessness because, you know, there's 24-hour coverage on TV, and I could watch the tanks rolling through the desert, and I could see, you know, the reporters, the embedded reporters covering it. But I didn't know where he was. I didn't know where he was in relation to all that. I didn't know if he was okay. And there is such a slow and, I guess, chain of information back. The flow of information is very slow.
Yeah.
Because they want it to be accurate. You know, they want it to be right. They don't want to inform you incorrectly.
And then once he's home, a whole new set of challenges, I would imagine.
Oh, definitely, definitely. We had sort of a unique situation because he was separating from the military upon his arrival from getting home and starting business school. So we had a house to sell. We had, you know, all kinds of challenges on top of just the basic, he's home, you know, and he's back, and he's in a whole new environment. And he was also, you know, going over to civilian life, and which is very, very different. But each soldier coming back has their own challenges, you know, has their own stuff they have to face. And it's definitely difficult, you know. And now that he's been home for a few months, I can kind of see that the challenges are not over. I mean, yeah, he's home, yeah, he's safe, but we're still kind of dealing with the fact that he was there and that, you know, that our roles have switched now that he's back again, and it's just very difficult. It's very difficult as a family.
And does he talk to you about what he experienced there, or is that something he keeps close to?
No, he talks about it. Like I said, the flow of information back here was really, really slow. They didn't have email like he did in Afghanistan. They didn't have phone calls as often, if at all. And so I didn't, like I said, know what he was going through when he was there. When he got back, I was very surprised at his stories compared to what was on TV. You know, on TV you saw, you know, the tanks and the gunfire and all of the conflicts and things. And he didn't really face that. He was part of an aviation unit that was moving to the desert and doing things, but they weren't doing what was on TV. So I was very surprised when he got home and the stories that he would tell. You know, he actually enjoyed his time over there, you know, as doing his job. I mean, that's what he has been training to do.
And what was the hardest thing for him to adjust to on return?
On the return?
Yeah.
I think, like I said, our unique situation is that he was separating. So I think the deflation of, you know, I think he felt a bit deflated that he wasn't a part of world events anymore. I think that he felt sort of, he was separating from the military, so he was in command when he was over there and left, you know, quite a number of soldiers there. I think that was very difficult for him. I think he sort of felt pulled back. You know, I think he felt still tied to them. And they're just returning now, and he came back in June. And for that whole time since then, I think he's felt, you know, a sense of loyalty to them. And it was very hard for him to leave them behind. I think just as far as civilian life is concerned, it's difficult to get used to everything from, you know, the freedom of playing with our daughter when he wants to, the freedom of, you know, eating where he wants to, eating in, you know, regular meals instead of MREs, and just, a, you know, very basic and very complex differences. And I think there's, like I said, each soldier has their own challenge and what is difficult for them to adjust to when they get back.
We're going to take a call now, Teresa, if you can just hold on a moment. And sure. I want to urge our listeners to give us a call at 1-800-989-8255. Let's go to Patty. She's in Atlanta, Georgia. Hi, Patty.
Hey there. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Go ahead.
I just have a comment. One of the people that I work with is in the Army Reserves, and he is a nurse anesthetist.
Mm-hmm.
And he's recently spent 6 months in Baghdad on a tour, and he came back. And one of the things that he did that really brought it brought what's going on over there back to us in a very powerful way is he brought in a photo album of things, of pictures of people, of Iraqis, of other Americans, and really brought that home. But one of the things at the tail end of his photo album that really nailed it for a lot of us is that he took some pictures, graphic though they were very powerful, of the remnants of a suicide bomber. And his whole point was that, you know, you may not want to look at this and you may not want to see what happens, but this is happening. And it's just my whole attitude towards whether I agree we need to be there or not really didn't make a difference anymore. So it was a very good thing for me to see and for us to see, and I would just encourage any people coming back to engage people that they may work with or family or whatever with pictures, because pictures are very powerful.
Thanks for your call, Patty.
Thank you very much.
I don't know if you agree with that, Teresa, or what your reaction to that is.
I do agree. You can hear descriptions on TV, and I think people have become a bit numbed by the fact that one soldier dies a day, you know, or there's an average of one soldier dying a day. And I think when you see it on TV, it doesn't really, like she said, hit home, and it really doesn't matter what the opinions or what everyone on TV says or talks about. What really matters is what's actually happening on the ground. And I did see pictures from over there, not as graphic as what the caller mentioned, but, you know, it's just so real. It's so real, and I think TV and the coverage, the constant coverage, definitely brings it down a little bit. I don't think people in everyday situations realize just how real it is over there and how much, regardless of your opinion, of anyone's opinion, it's still happening, and the soldiers are still dealing with it every single day, and they have to wake up and deal with it every single day.
All right. Thanks so much for being with us today, Teresa.
Oh, well, thank you. Thanks again.
Teresa Coppa is the wife of former Army officer and captain who served in the 101st Airborne, which is starting to come home now. We're joined now by Philip Speak. He's a retired colonel who served with the U.S. Army Reserve for 35 years. Currently, he's president of the Big Bend chapter of the Association for the U.S. Army. He's also vice chair for the state of Florida's Employer Support Guard and Reserve, and he joins us from member station WFSU in Tallahassee, Florida. Thanks for being with us, Colonel.
Thank you, Lynn. Good afternoon to you, and thank you for bringing this to our communities.
Well, perhaps first you could tell us what the Association for the U.S. Army is and what they do.
We're a volunteer organization that's dedicated to the support of the Army soldiers and their families and promoting the well-being of the Army and moving it forward.
Yeah. Is your chapter in Florida working on anything specifically in terms of the troops that are now coming home? Military is undergoing the largest troop rotation since World War II. Are you getting ready for that?
Absolutely. We have almost 200,000 Guard and Reserve on active duty as of the 4th of February. That's a huge number. Our chapter adopted a program called Do the Right Thing. Adopt Guard and Reserve units and their family support / family readiness groups. Part of that effort is to work with the families while the soldiers are gone, while they're away at the theater of operation. And then when they come back to assist that transition back, there's a tremendous transition problem for Guard and Reserve, because not only are they coming back home out of the military, out of a war zone, they're not going back to a military unit. They're going back to their families, their communities, and their jobs. Much different than an active duty soldier that's going back to a regular unit where he's got the support systems at the installations. Our folks don't have all those support. There are things that the military is doing, the Guard and Reserve do to assist that, but we think there needs to be some supplemental, and that's one of the things that we're trying to do, work with universities to get psychologists, some counseling for those that need it. Not everyone needs counseling, but there are a good number that do.
What's the difference? Maybe you can talk a little bit about what the different challenges are for someone who's going right back into a civilian situation, right back into an office, for instance, as opposed to somebody who's going to be going back to a military base. Why would things be so different?
Because they just spent a year in a combat zone and doing nothing but their military-type jobs. In a stressful situation that day in and day out, they're watching their backsides, they're watching out for their fellow soldiers. Now all of a sudden they're back into a totally different world. Sometimes they're going to feel that I don't have that support system. The people don't understand. Whereas in the military, you can grunt something or say something or nod something, and your fellow military folks understand that. You're in the civilian world. These employers have never been in, a lot of them never been in the military. They don't understand, and there's sometimes a sense of loss from that soldier of not being able to have that support system around them.
Yeah. It seems that every time there's a military conflict, returning troops face a different set of problems. Is anybody anticipating what the problems specifically might be for troops returning from this conflict?
I'm sure there's been a lot of thought about that, about the types of problems. Generally, you're going to have very similar problems. Probably not enough study done on Guard and Reserve, because you haven't had the activation level Guard and Reserve that you have today into a combat zone. I think we'll be learning a lot from this first rotation to understand, because this is only the first of many, many rotations, not just Iraq but other places. I think you hit a key point. We do need to get lessons learned from this rotation.
Yeah. How do you begin to prepare employers, for example? We're talking about it from, dealing with the troops themselves, but how do you prepare the civilian employers, the co-workers? Do you do any work with the community in that way?
As a part of ESGR, that's one of our missions, is to work with employers. We do things called boss lift, that we take them to military installations and let them observe training, get a hands-on feel for what the military is all about, to learn that it's a little different than probably what they've seen in the movies or what they think a soldier does. They find out their soldiers learn a lot of skills that are very important for the civilian world. They also see some of the things that the soldier's going to go through. We need to do a lot more education in the employer side on the return. I don't think we're there yet on that particular piece. We've been trying just to educate them as to what the soldier's doing and why it's necessary for the soldier to be there.
Colonel Philip Speak is a retired U.S. Army Reserve and president of the Big Bend chapter of the Association of the U.S. Army. We're talking about what life is like for troops returning home from war. I'm Lynn Neary. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Lynn Neary in Washington. We're talking about the challenges the military faces when they military troops face when they return to life back in the United States. You're invited to join the discussion. What questions do you have about mental health or rejoining the family? Give us a call at 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. And joining me today is Colonel Philip Speak. He is retired from the U.S. Army Reserves after 35 years of service, and he's currently currently helping soldiers adjust to life back in the United States. We're going to take a call now from Tally, and Tally is in Columbia, South Carolina. Hi, Tally.
Hi.
Go ahead.
I just want to reemphasize what the colonel said. I think he had some very good words about educating civilian employers. I've been back now 9 months from Iraq. I'm an F-16 pilot with the South Carolina Air National Guard. And I am actually a lawyer in civilian life, and integration back was not as easy as one might think. But without the help and understanding of a good civilian employer, I think that would be much more difficult.
What were the challenges that you faced, Tally? And I guess the ones that you really weren't expecting is what I'd be curious to hear about.
Sure. I guess, there are plenty that we were expecting, but it took a lot of time to get, quite frankly, to get interested in work again other than flying combat missions. And so that took some time. I think it was important to take a little bit of time off when we got home, and that may be difficult for an employer to understand when they have an employee coming back who's already been gone for several months and then ask for some additional free time off. But I think they'll be a much more productive person when they return to the office if they do take that.
Did you take any time off in between?
I took a couple of weeks when I got back. We were all given a little bit of leave.
Mm-hmm. So is there a sort of a sense that what you're coming back to is simply not as important as what you've left behind?
Well, I think that we had a very acute sense of relevance when you're participating in a war, that you're doing something every day that is contributing to something that you watch on the news. And I think that just gives you I think that is sometimes hard to come down from, and but it doesn't take time. Your priorities must rearrange when you come back home, and they do, and they should. And it just after a little bit of time, you're right back to normal. But it does not happen immediately.
And so the work that you said that the colonel is doing, sort of preparing civilian employers to be ready for the changes are necessary. This is important groundwork that needs to be laid.
Yes, it is. I think that's very important. It's something that we have not had to do in the past because as Guard and Reserve members, a lot of folks have not had to take such extended deployments, and so employers are not as familiar as they are going to become with what kind of demands are put upon their Guard and Reserve employees.
Okay, thanks so much for calling in, Tally.
Okay, thank you.
Colonel, I don't know if you want to react at all to that or respond to, I think Tally's confirming a lot of what you said by her own personal experience.
I think she was right on with her comments, because what she's saying is the intensity of the operation that people are operating in an environment like that, and the fact that they're part of history and what's going on. I think all you get caught up in that emotion. You come back home, all of a sudden everything changes. And nobody understands you. Nobody understands what you're doing, where you've been, where you're coming from, your thoughts. And I think she hit it right on the head that we do need to educate these employers. And not only that, you got your family to deal with. You got all the changes that occurred for over a year that you're gone with inside the family, and you got to adjust back to that, to that spouse that's taken control. And is doing everything, is running the checkbook, running the family, doing all those things. You've got to adjust back into that. So now you've got another double or triple whammy, and you got to bring those jets back down because you were operating at such a high threshold. You got to back off some. So it's very, very difficult.
All right, let's bring Dr. Vance Hamilton in on this discussion now. He is the Mental Health Caroline Executive for the Veterans Affairs Hospital in Houston, Texas. Thanks for being with us, Dr. Hamilton.
Thank you for having me.
I wanted to ask you to, we were talking earlier about the fact that there's been a learning curve over the years as each conflict goes by, the military, I guess, learns something new about how to deal with returning combat veterans. Maybe you can tell us how the state of mental health care offered to servicemen and women has changed since the Vietnam War, for example.
Well, we've learned a great deal since the Vietnam War in mental health. The general feeling at the time of Vietnam was that if you brought people back over here very quickly, and then brought them back into what was considered to be normal life, then that would minimize the psychiatric casualties that were such a prominent feature of earlier wars. And the initial reports seemed to bear that out. That is, that there were very few reports of those kinds of casualties. Unfortunately, as we learned within a few years, this was simply a problem of reporting, not a problem of them not happening. So we identified in the interim the fact that the definition of a mental disorder called post-traumatic stress disorder, or PTSD, was made part of the official diagnostic classification, made a great deal of difference, I think, in legitimizing the study of that and the fact that it was important to pay attention to it. We know now that PTSD is not the only thing that one can expect in the way of mental health problems that may occur to people after they return from a combat setting. There are increased risks for depressive disorders. There are increased risks for alcohol and drug abuse happening to people. All these things were not really well appreciated during the time of Vietnam, and now we're paying a lot more attention to them, and we're trying to intervene really at a very early stage, which is probably the most important thing.
Now, are returning members of the service offered counseling services automatically now, or do they still have to seek counseling?
Well, if they are returning to their military units, I believe they are offered it. Everybody is offered it. If they're coming out, if they're being discharged and coming as veterans, the VA is making a special push to make sure that all those folks get offered what they need, whether it's counseling for mental health or any other kinds of services. They're designated to, at each VA medical center, a specific point of contact person for returning veterans of the Iraq War, so that that's the entry to all of the services that the VA has offered. There's also an entry to the system through the system of what are called vet centers throughout the country, which are informal storefront kinds of operations that have a bit less of the bureaucracy than perhaps some of the larger facilities. But even in the larger facilities nowadays, the Veterans Affairs motto now is, let's take care of the veteran and their family. We'll worry about the paperwork later.
What would you say, can you generalize about what might be one of the, some of the more common adjustments that need to be made that would be within the range of normalcy before somebody is really going into an area where they're hitting some kind of serious psychiatric problem? But just some of the normal adjustments that might be really tough mentally and emotionally, but that many returning troops might face.
Sure. And I think it's important to realize that according to the best data we have, the majority of returning troops are not going to get into serious, protracted mental health problems. There'll be a significant number who will, but the majority of them won't. And as far as what's within the normal range of problems, really, I don't know that I can describe it better than what you've been hearing from the horse's mouth, so to speak, you know, from your callers and your guests so far. It's a big adjustment mentally to go from a place where your life is essentially in danger every day and you have to be very adaptively vigilant to everything that's going around you, to coming back to ordinary life where that's really not required. And so it's going to be difficult for the people around you to understand that. It's going to be difficult for you to let go of it. You're also in a situation when you're in a combat zone that you have to depend very strongly upon the people around you to look out for you and for you to look out for them. The intensity of that kind of bonding is something that is not a regular feature of civilian life. People may miss that. They may also, some people may, as I think one of your callers mentioned, miss the feeling of being really relevant contributors to what's going on in your country, that you feel much more immediately that when you're in combat than when you come back over here. There's also, in some cases, a sense of distance from the people that you have been close to in your civilian life because, as the colonel put it so well, they won't be able immediately, at least, to understand what you've been going through. People who haven't been in combat zones often have very stereotyped notions of what you have done or haven't done mm-hmm. over there.
Let's see if we can get a call in now from Eileen in Morehead City, North Carolina. Hi, Eileen. Go ahead.
Hi, how are you? This is a wonderful topic, and I appreciate you guys talking about this today.
Yeah. Thanks for being on the program.
I have a question. My husband is a pilot who participated in Iraqi Freedom, and I'm often asked kind of what his or what the after effects are with him, his return and his experience from the air side. And I really never know how to answer or respond to this because he has learned to, and I guess has been taught to separate himself from it and doesn't share the emotional side. I'm kind of wondering if it's a common thing for pilots and for, I guess, really, you know, other military personnel to feel this way and to feel kind of separated from it.
Feel separated from what exactly?
The emotional side, I guess, like I said, the after effects of, you know, what took place, what they participated in.
Yes, it is, actually. It's not uncommon at all. I think the colonel can probably speak to that from the practical side of things. From the mental health side, that's an extremely common kind of reaction to feel like you are either emotionally numb or emotionally distant. If you're in combat, that's an adaptive thing to do, to not get too emotionally engaged because you don't know which of the people around you may not be around you the next day. Everybody is at risk. That is not very adaptive when you come back to civilian life, and most people have a period where they have to kind of decompress and transition to getting close again to people around them. There's also, as was well expressed before, the problem that trying to explain to people what you've been through is often difficult, and some people feel like, well, it's just better not to talk about that. They just wouldn't understand if I tried to tell them.
Is that hard for you as the spouse, Eileen, that your husband isn't sharing that kind of...
Oh, sure. And also, I'm a representative for him. You know, I mean, when people ask me, I try to portray him and his views in the best way. And sometimes, I mean, especially this one, it's an interesting one that lots of people want to know how he's feeling and what he went through. And I really can't respond the best way. So yeah, it can be difficult. But, well, thank you very much.
All right. Thanks so much for your call, Eileen.
All right.
Okay. Let's take another call now from Lisa in Denver. Hi, Lisa.
Yes. Hi. I'm concerned about what is being done for National Guardsmen when they come back. My husband's been in Iraq for almost a year and isn't due back until May.
Colonel Speak?
Yes. Just listening to some of these comments, it makes me want to say a couple of things. There's a lot of positive things going on. And that's one of the things that we're trying to stress is that the homecoming event doesn't start just when a soldier gets home. It needs to start well before that. And that's one of the things we were trying to do, working with the families that are here to support the families so that the soldier knows that the communities, both the political communities, the corporate community, care about their spouses, their families. And that sends a very good message to the soldier because they're busy trying to take care of business there, and they don't need to be distracted by worrying about their families. That doesn't mean they're not going to have some concerns. But the more we can do from this side, much better.
Now,
Something else is going on, though, that we're coming back in a positive environment, unlike the Vietnam War. They're coming back as heroes and heroines, and that certainly helps the process. So I don't think we need to say it's all negative. The Guard is doing things back when the families come back or the soldiers come back. They have a thing called the Homecoming Council and for families to let them know what to expect when that husband or spouse comes back.
Are
so
you aware of that?
There are things that are out there, yes.
I believe so. That's the only thing I've been told about, and it's only a two-hour workshop, and I'm just concerned because, you know, we had our first child while he was gone, and he's had a hard time mentally over there because he's had a lot of downtime and he's frustrated. And so my big concern is that with him being National Guard, he's not exposed to a lot of the options that some of our other armed forces are. And so I just wanted to see if there were resources that I could point him to and point myself to when he gets here, because it is going to be a major adjustment for our family.
Lisa, I'm going to see if Dr. Vance Hamilton can respond to that. But first, I just want to remind you that you are listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Dr. Hamilton?
Yes. I would recommend, how long has your husband's tour been?
He has been away from home for a year now and won't be back until May.
Okay. I would certainly recommend that if you have a nearby either VA medical center or vet center, that you and your husband check by there. That will be the single best source to point you toward the kinds of resources, whether they're within the VA itself, some of which you will be eligible for, or whether they're in the community. Those are good points of contact.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thanks for your call.
Mm-hmm.
Let's try and get one more in before the break. Tabitha in Bloomington. Hi, Tabitha. Tabitha, you on the line?
Yes. Thanks for taking my call.
Go ahead.
Hi. I have a coworker, a friend, actually, who is only 22, and he has returned from Iraq, and he actually has to go back for another tour in March or April of this year. And I believe he's a National Guardsman, so he's not, you know, with a lot of military people on a day-to-day basis, and I don't believe he's taking advantage of these kind of therapy sessions, in part because he's 22 and he probably doesn't feel like he needs quote-unquote therapy. And I've noticed that he does engage in some of these things that Dr. Hamill was talking about, you know, drinking and the kind of, I feel like he's kind of trying to live it up while he can because he has to go back to Iraq. And I wonder if this is a common, you know, thing. He doesn't have a lot of support. And what's going to happen to him whenever he comes back the next time? Is there going to be increased support for him? And also, another comment was that
Tabitha, I'm going to ask you if you can hold on because we're going to have to take a short break, and we'll get an answer for you when we come back from either Dr. Vance Hamilton or Colonel Philip Speak. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Lynn Neary in Washington. Tomorrow, we'll talk about a new book that explores the unique and varied role Jesus has played in America. Right now, we're talking about the troops coming home from Iraq. My guests are Colonel Philip Speak. He's retired from the U.S. Army Reserves after 35 years of service. And also Dr. Vance Hamilton. He is the mental health Careline Executive for the Veterans Affairs Hospital in Houston, Texas. And on the line with us is Tabitha. Thanks for standing by, Tabitha. And you were saying that you have a friend, a young friend, I think you said he was about 22, has to go back to Iraq. He's here right now, perhaps facing some problems with alcoholism and other things. Let's see if we can just get Dr. Hamilton to quickly respond to your concerns.
Sure. I think in situations like this, it would be a very good idea, while the opportunity presents itself, for your friend or others who are having similar difficulties to try to seek some kind of assistance now. It would be better in terms of being able to intervene early, and it also would be better in terms of having them better prepared if he does have to go back over to Iraq. Then he'll be, I think, in much better condition to do that if we're able to see if there's something that he needs that we can help with.
Okay, thanks so much for your call, Tabitha. We're going to take a call now from Kristen, and she's in Buford, South Carolina. Hi, Kristen.
Hi there.
Go ahead. Go ahead, Kristen.
Yeah, I'm calling because my husband is a Navy chaplain, and he was with the Marines in both Afghanistan and Iraq. And the two homecomings were really different. After Afghanistan, there's always a little bit of a honeymoon period. And after Afghanistan, the honeymoon period lasted maybe a day. And then it was really rocky. And then 9 months later, he went to Iraq. So I was expecting the same kind of thing or worse when he came back because I knew his experience there had been more intense. And to my surprise, he was really mellow. And so I wound up writing an article about it, trying to understand why they were both so different, that was in the Washington Post magazine this past fall. And
did you understand why they were different?
I did, after I really kind of sat down and examined it. Part of the problem in Afghanistan was that he was on a ship for about 6 months coming and going to Afghanistan, and he had a really difficult roommate, and so that created a lot of stress for him when he came back. that just kind of, you know, was unleashed.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was very individual. In addition, you know, it was after 9/11, so there was just a lot of stress in general. And he left about a week afterwards, so we didn't get any of that reassuring time together, because I think after 9/11, you know, the reaction was to run home and hug your family.
Mm-hmm.
And we really couldn't do that. And I was real uptight and brittle after 9/11 as well. After Iraq, I think what he saw there was so intense, you know, just seeing how other people live and the difficulty of the lives of the Iraqi people, seeing the suffering there really made him appreciate life at home. And I think to some extent he just came back feeling like he wasn't going to sweat the small stuff anymore.
Interesting. Thanks so much for your call, Kristen.
Sure.
And I want to thank my guests for joining me today. Also, Colonel Philip Speak is retired from the U.S. Army Reserves after 35 years of service, and he's currently helping soldiers adjust to life back in the States. Thanks for being with us, Colonel Speak. And
thank
also,
you, ma'am.
Dr. Vance Hamilton, the Mental Health Care Line Executive for the Veterans Affairs Hospital in Houston, Texas. Thanks so much for being with us today, Dr. Hamilton.
You're very welcome.